Sometimes our meditation feels just perfect. We seem to finally attain that beautiful state of body and mind that we were intuitively working towards for so long. We can describe it as a state of stillness, inner silence, detachment, and control. In time, this becomes a common experience for good meditators. When the body relaxes completely and the mind is calm, all excess muscle tension dies away. This unusually low level of muscle activity gives us a profound sense of physical stillness. The emotions that make us habitually restless also disappear. We find great pleasure just sitting still, apparently doing nothing. Along with the stillness comes silence. When the mind calms down, it gradually stops talking to itself. The inner dialogue and commentaries fade away. We feel fully alive and present, but also quiet and peaceful, free from the dynamic energy of language. In deep meditation, we also feel detached and serene. We pour our attention into the body, which is always a relaxing thing to do, and withdraw from the ongoing demands of the world. We feel calm, cool, and dispassionate, and above all, in control. It then becomes our choice whether or not to think about or emotionally respond to anything that pops up in our minds. Stillness, or doing nothing, silence, or not talking to ourselves, and detachment from the world and our usual preoccupations are hardly ultimate goals. Lovely as it is, we wouldn't want to stay permanently in this state. We get infinitely more satisfaction from what we do, say, and think, and from our engagement with life. So, what is the value of this kind of meditation? Stillness, silence, and detachment are all about rest and recovery. Deep rest is a rare experience for most of us, but imagine if you could have weeks of good sleep, or a long holiday, or time apart from the people and activities that stress you. Your body and mind would have an uninterrupted opportunity to revitalize themselves and restore optimal function. You would be healthier and you would think better. Meditation as a method of temporarily detaching from all mental and physical action is an accelerated way of achieving similar results. Therapeutic as it is, to sit still and do nothing is actually quite difficult. We all find it easy to waste time on useless activities, but could you sit still without thinking, which is a kind of activity in itself, for 10 minutes? It takes far more discipline than we might imagine. When we have nothing to do, and also when we sleep, our minds don't just switch off. They naturally revert to what is called their default network. They typically process the unfinished and emotionally charged events of the day at random. This is how our minds digest and make sense of our experience. We couldn't function without it. This means that when we try to sit still and do nothing, we are bound to be visited by an endless stream of thoughts, memories, sensations, moods, and plans, all inviting us to reflect on them. Collectively, we can call this the stream of consciousness. We can't ignore this, and it never stops even for the most accomplished meditator, but we can relate to it in a way that maintains our inner stillness and silence. The secret, as usual, is awareness. We try to observe the stream of consciousness without participating in it. We learn to watch without reacting. We neutralize our tendency to automatically respond to any stimulus. We try to do nothing, or as little as possible, but nor do we space out or daydream. We still have to stay on guard, resisting the ever-present temptation to think. Nor can we reject everything indiscriminately. For safety reasons alone, we need to lightly monitor and evaluate what is happening. Some of it, at least, will need to be attended to. We can't see everything at once. We monitor the stream of consciousness sequentially, one thing after another. To be aware of a particular thought or emotion means that we first have to stop it. We hold it in the mind, evaluate it, and choose how to respond. In particular, we decide whether to give it any more attention or not. In the vast majority of cases, this whole sequence of perception, evaluation, and response will take less than a second. This is not enough time to trigger off a body reaction. So it feels as if we've done nothing at all, and our sense of stillness remains intact. In meditation, awareness is primarily used in the pursuit of stillness, inner silence, and detachment. We shouldn't forget that meditation is essentially a monastic discipline that gives supreme value to those virtues. This means that traditional awareness or mindfulness practices ask us to relate to the stream of consciousness in much the same way that a monk would. Those monks who actually meditate are trained to regard nearly all the contents of the mind as temptations and distractions. They prejudge virtually all thoughts and emotions as unworthy of further attention and try to disengage from them. A good monk is skilled at stopping thoughts quickly and in suppressing, dissolving, or devaluing the emotions that drive them. In this way, he disengages his body's desire to move and steadfastly resists the temptation to get engaged with anything. This is the secret of meditative serenity. It depends on having a strong, vigilant no in one's mental arsenal. We don't need to be as ruthlessly dismissive as a good monk, but the method is useful. Few of us are in total control of our minds. We are all at the mercy of at least certain of our thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. By meditating, we can learn to stop or slow down this reactivity and return to a place of stillness where deep rest and recovery can occur. We do this in much the same way as a monk does, by becoming a spectator to our own stream of consciousness. We cultivate a detached, watching, emotionally cool, non-reactive, objective stance towards whatever is happening in the moment. The concept of awareness and the watching mind is often explained through images. The pure mind is said to be like a mirror that reflects all things with equal indifference, or the mind is regarded as inherently empty, like the sky, untouched by the thoughts that pass through it like clouds. The ideal state is often defined as choiceless or non-judgmental awareness, although the term non-reactive would be more accurate than non-judgmental. These descriptions of awareness can be useful starting points for a meditator. They illustrate the idea of a detached, watching mind, and they point to the experience of stillness, silence, and withdrawal. And yet, they don't quite bear up under closer analysis. The value of a strong no, of being able to stop any thought, emotion, or action on the spot, can't be overestimated. But none of us observes the activities of our minds for this purpose alone. We don't just stop thoughts and emotions, we also appraise them and reorient ourselves towards them. The purpose of mindfulness is so that we can make better judgments. In particular, our minds are hardwired to notice what is out of balance, since that is the key to correcting them. We stop and look at what is happening in order to dump the mental trash, to see things in perspective, and to restore inner balance. It is quite impossible to be a detached observer and notice all stimuli equally, the way a mirror is assumed to do. Even if we try to just watch in a non-discriminating, non-judgmental way, most of our attention will invariably go to what doesn't feel right in our bodies and minds. We always evaluate what we perceive, and we always give what is unpleasant, painful, or troublesome priority over what is neutral or pleasant. Since conscious awareness almost always improves the situation, noticing what is out of balance is an extremely useful thing to do. This means a good awareness meditator is never completely detached from what he is observing. He is also likely to be making countless subtle adjustments in relation to what he sees, and these are judgment calls. He notices his jaw is tight, so he loosens it. He notices he is still brooding over some slight, and he lets that thought go. He notices he is irritated or sad, and he stops trying to suppress that feeling. Moreover, these more or less conscious adjustments blend seamlessly into the unconscious homeostatic functions of the body that regulate arousal, muscle tone, and all other biological processes. By consciously observing what is happening, he reinforces his body's natural instinct for balance and optimal function, and for recovery and rest. So let's summarize where we're at. We can think of awareness in at least two ways. Awareness that emphasizes detachment from thoughts and emotion leads to deep stillness, inner silence, and a chance for the body and mind to rest. The first meditation on this CD is called Just Watching, and it emphasizes this passive, disengaged kind of awareness. The second meditation goes a step further. It is called Inner Balance, and it emphasizes the more transformative aspects of awareness. It encourages the mind to respond to subtle imbalances, troublesome thoughts and emotions as they appear, and gently guide them in the right direction. However, the benefits of meditation don't stop at relaxation, inner balance, and present moment awareness. It may seem counterintuitive, but even the Buddha regarded these as just the foundations for what really mattered. He said the purpose of awareness is a kind of deep thought, sometimes translated as penetrative insight. This simply means being able to think clearly and at depth about what is important, so we can make good judgments and choices. So, how does meditative thought differ from our usual runaway mental activity? Its tone is indicated by words such as reflection, contemplation, and insight. In modern psychological language, this kind of deep thought is called embodied cognition. As this term suggests, deep thought is not just verbal. It is accompanied by a continuous moment-to-moment awareness of the body. Because it receives more input from body sensations and emotion, we are likely to think as much with images and feelings as with words. While we still talk to ourselves, we also notice in real time how we feel and how our bodies are responding. Deep thought tends to be more lateral than linear. It tends to hold the issue in mind and notice the arising of associations rather than chasing down a solution. Because the body is calmer, the intuitive problem-solving faculty of sleep is closer to the surface. Embodied thought thus involves a more holistic interplay of words, body sensations, emotion, and images. In these CDs, I've asked you to manage thoughts in various ways. Firstly, you simply ignore a particular thought by refocusing on your body. Secondly, you catch and name a thought before you dismiss it. Thirdly, you spend more time with it. You evaluate and process a thought briefly before moving on. When you're reasonably competent with these techniques, you can explore a further option. You can contemplate an issue that is important to you while you meditate. The final track on the CD explains how.